From KUNC, this is Colorado Edition. I'm Erin O'Toole.
And I'm Henry Zimmerman. It's Monday, August 19th.
Today on the show, one man's mission to revive the lost practice of horse dentistry.
So now when you look in there, see how far back the teeth go?
Wow.
Plus, a national park has recruited help from man's best friend to keep aquatic invasive species out.
We work with these really ball-crazy dogs. As you can see, Barley keeps dropping his toy at your feet.
That's coming up on Colorado Edition. We've been hearing about recalls a lot recently, whether it's efforts to recall Governor Jared Polis, a recall of Netherlands Town Mayor and two members of its board of trustees, the list goes on. Today, we're going to look at a local recall election in the town of Estes Park, and it all started with a mountain coaster.
Wait, Erin, before we start, tell me about how the recall process works in Colorado.
Actually, I'm going to let Dave Bowden do it. He is the news editor for Ballotpedia, an online political encyclopedia.
You need a petition signed by 25% of the votes cast in the last election, and it needs to be filed with the Colorado Secretary of State.
It's a process that's done by signature gatherers, so there have to be enough voters interested in a recall to actually make it happen.
Is the process the same to recall like a statewide elected official and a local figure?
Yeah, actually, the process is the same. That threshold needed to get it on the ballot just depends on how many votes the official got in their election. So, for example, the number of signatures needed to generate a recall for Governor Jared Polis would be over 630,000. In the case of Mayor Pro Tem Cody Walker from Estes Park, only 450 signatures were needed to get his recall on the ballot. And I just want to add, to get a sense of how contentious this recall election is, the signature gatherers only got 454 signatures to get this onto the ballot. That's only four more than they needed.
So why is there a recall election for Mayor Pro Tem in Estes Park?
Right. That's a great question. And so to answer it, we're going to go to Estes Park, talk with two local journalists who have been covering this issue for the Estes Park Trail Gazette. Zach Clemens is the managing editor and Tyler Pillay is a reporter. Zach began by explaining how the city government works in the town.
The town is run by a town board of trustees. There's a mayor and a mayor pro tem. The only power that the mayor has that the other trustees don't is an agenda-setting power. Mm-hmm. And essentially, the mayor pro tem is the vice mayor in case the mayor can't perform his duties.
And Cody Walker is the mayor pro tem. So who is he?
Well, he has a long history in Estes Park. His father started Sombrero Stables over 50 years ago, and he's grown up here. He's been part of the school board. He's been the president of the school board. He runs the Boy Scouts. He helped with the football team. He does a lot of charity work, and he's been a trustee for, this is his first term, so mm-hmm. He's up for election in April.
And there's a recall election being held in August?
Yep, that's right.
So why is he being recalled?
Well, it all started because of a mountain coaster.
Okay, I have to ask, what is a mountain coaster?
You know what? I was wondering the same thing. Here's what Zach said.
It's more of a slide. It's like an alpine slide, like you would see in Glenwood Springs.
Yeah, okay. So you get in the car and it hurtles down.
Yeah, it uses gravity just to follow the slope of the land.
Gotcha.
So there's no hydraulics or anything like that. It's not going to be high above the ground. It's going to be low. He owns a property of 400 acres, and it's going to be kind of in the middle of the property. So you won't really even see it from the road.
So the recall is really about a vote that Walker made to change the development code that would allow him to build this mountain coaster on his land. Some calling for recall say he should have recused himself from that vote.
Community Development Director Randy Hunt noticed a discrepancy in the code in early 2017. Mm-hmm. And the town was technically in violation of the development code when they had events in Bond Park, which is a park right downtown, like the farmer's market they have each Thursday. So every farmer's market, they were in violation of the code. Because what the farmer's market is technically a parks and recreation facility. And the definition for that facility states non-commercial. So essentially what they did was they struck non-commercial from that definition, and that was applied to multiple zoning districts, including residential zones, mm-hmm. which Cody Walker's property was zoned residential. So by him voting for this code change, it allowed him to develop the mountain coaster.
And I asked if that vote came down to Walker.
It passed 5-2. So Technically, if he had recused himself, it still would have passed.
Okay.
But if he announced that he had a conflict of interest, it might not have.
Why is this a cause for recall?
Well, the recall committee is saying he knowingly committed an ethics violation. And by that standard, he should be recalled.
And it seems like it's just so tied to the mountain coaster.
Yes, it very much is.
Which is sort of a larger issue here.
Yes, there's a lot of controversy over developments. A lot of longtime residents who don't want to see a whole lot of changes in town. They like Estes how they remember it. A number of developments have been denied by the Planning Commission. And it's seemingly every development is fairly controversial in town, no matter what it is, no matter if it's a mountain coaster or workforce housing.
Now, I asked Tyler Pillay, the lead reporter at the Gazette, who's been covering this issue, if anyone in town is for the mountain coaster.
Absolutely. I mean, there's plenty of people in town who recognize that this is a tourist haven and the economy thrives on tourism. And people are all for bringing that type of development to town because it's going to bring tax dollars to town.
I also asked him, are people against the mountain coaster or are they against the way that Walker handled the vote?
Obviously, there's people who say, I don't want my view blocked. I don't want to hear people screaming at, you know, 4 p.m. in the afternoon. And they're worried about traffic issues and congestion. On the other hand, there are folks who think he was making a backdoor deal with town staff to push his business agenda. So I think it's a mix of both. And I definitely think there's people maybe who are on one side of the fence more so than other in that regard. But I think that's a couplet in terms of how most opponents of the coaster itself and Cody Walker, for that matter, view it.
And just to wrap this up, I asked Zach Clements if this whole recall is unusual in Estes Park politics.
Not really. There was another recall attempt against Walker last year.
Oh.
It didn't get past the petition even being approved. And in 2005, there was a trustee actually recalled for not standing during the Pledge of Allegiance. Because under God was against his beliefs.
All this political activity and the push for recalls isn't just taking place in Estes Park. Dave Bowden from Ballotpedia says the number of recall elections in the past few years has gone up noticeably around the country and in Colorado, and that he's seen a lot more discussion about recalls.
I think it's partly due to just the polarization of our political environment. The way our electoral system is, people vote at regular intervals. And if they have passion or want to act on something in between that time, working on a recall effort gives them the opportunity to, you know, make a change or make an impact in between when they would regularly vote.
The recall election for Mayor Pro Tem Walker will take place tomorrow, August 20th. The town of Estes Park has issued 4,371 ballots to all the active voters in the town. There is one candidate on the ballot to take his place, Eric W. Blackhurst.
And a simple majority vote is going to be needed for a decision. Town Clerk Jackie Williamson estimates the recall election cost about $20,000 plus staff time. We'll update you on the results later this week.
Get a quick look at today's news.
The Northern Front Range has missed a deadline to improve air quality standards. That's according to the Environmental Protection Agency. The Coloradoan reports the EPA is expected to mark the 9-county region in serious noncompliance with a federal standard. That's because the region has high concentrations of ground-level ozone and smog that could lead to respiratory health issues.
The state's Air Quality Control Commission just passed a zero-emission vehicle standard to reduce the effects. It requires automakers to make 5% of vehicles for sale to be electric or hybrid by the year 2023.
Researchers at the National Center for Atmospheric Research think they have a better way to predict the hailstorms that dent cars and damage roofs every summer in the Mountain West. They trained a neural network by showing it about 100,000 different storms, some that resulted in big hail, others little hail, and some none at all. The network could then pick up on subtle differences in storm shape and qualities to predict hail output. A similar method is used for facial recognition. The scientists say that they hope the technique will result in fewer false alarms.
And a quick update. On Thursday, we spoke with Ken Klober, the founder of the Leadville Trail 100. The race took place this weekend. The winner was Ryan Smith from Boulder, who finished in 16 hours, 33 minutes, and 25 seconds. The women's winner was Magdalena Bolle, who came in at 20 hours, 18 minutes, and 7 seconds.
Zebra and quagga mussels can devastate an ecosystem, and Yellowstone National Park is doing everything they can to keep them out. As Maggie Mullen reports for KUNC, that includes harnessing the power of man's best friend.
Barley, the border collie, is really in his element.
Barley and Tobias and I are looking for zebra and quagga mussels.
That's dog handler Kayla Fratt. Today, Barley, along with Tobias, a yellow lab, will sniff boats, kayaks, paddleboards, and any other kind of watercraft before it goes out on the water. The trio is with Working Dogs for Conservation, a nonprofit group that smells out invasive and endangered species all over the world. So far today, Tobias and Barley have inspected about 10 different boats in a parking lot next to Yellowstone Lake.
I haven't found anything yet, but that's what we like to hear.
Invasive aquatic species like zebra or quagga mussels can attach themselves to wet surfaces, so all watercraft entering the park from other places must go through an inspection. Fratt tells me the mussels might appear small, but they are very destructive.
They'll encrust pretty much every solid surface in the lake. They outcompete native species. They'll clog our drainage pipes, and they're filter feeders. So the lakes get clearer, which is one plus, but that's because there's no nutrients left for anything else to grow in.
As we're talking, a truck with a small boat on a trailer pulls up to the parking lot. Fratt explains that a human inspection is mandatory, but boaters can opt out of the dog one.
Do you guys mind if we have a mussel detection dog run through your boat quick?
A what?
Yeah, he's looking for zebra mussels.
Sure.
Awesome, thank you.
Tobias sniffs around the outside of the boat with Fratt holding on tight to his leash. He gets into all the nooks and crannies.
And there's a lot of holes in this boat. Check here. Check here.
It only takes him about a minute, and he reports no signs of the nasty mussels. If he had, he'd be barking, whining, and scratching.
There's a good boy.
Nice job!
Tobias and Barley weren't always conservation dogs. Barley came from a rescue shelter in Denver, and Tobias was once a stray found wandering the streets of Helena, Montana. Fratt's organization employs all kinds of dog breeds, but they do need to have a good nose, and they also need to be the obsessive type.
We work with these really ball-crazy dogs. As you can see, Barley keeps dropping his toy at your feet.
Fratt says training the dogs to detect the mussels is similar to teaching them to search for other things, like a missing person or drugs. It has everything to do with scent.
And what we basically do is we'll take a little vial of zebra mussels. They're frozen, dried, and crushed so that they're super-duper dead. And we'll hold them out, and if the dog puts his nose on them, he gets the ball thrown at him.
Handlers do this over and over again with dogs before they start hiding the vial in really easy-to-find places.
Because I know if they find it, they get the ball, and then you basically just make it harder and harder for them to find it until they get really good at it.
And here in Yellowstone, there's a lot at stake. Sue Mills oversees the Aquatic Invasive Species Program at the park.
If zebra or quagga mussels were to get established in a place like Yellowstone, it would be a major ecological crisis, not only for us, but for everyone downstream.
That's because Yellowstone is a headwaters for the Columbia River Basin, which is the last major river system in the U.S. without zebra or quagga mussels. So Mills is looking at every possible solution, and she wondered what role the dogs could play.
I was curious to see, are they really that good? They look like they're good.
So far, she says, she's impressed. But dogs do have their limitations.
Like people, they need rest, so you need more than one dog.
And since Yellowstone has three different motorized boat ramps, they need sets of dogs for each of those.
So you start having quite a large kennel at that point, and the question comes up is whether or not we would, at some point, have detection dogs in the park.
Right now, the park is renting Barley and Tobias from Fratt's conservation group, and a lot of people do. These dogs don't stop at mussels. In Tanzania, for instance, they track down human poachers, and closer to home in Montana and Idaho, they figure out the movement patterns of bears and mountain lions. Dog handler Kayla Fratt says this job takes her everywhere.
We might be coming to check out some endangered or invasive species near you.
For the Mountain West News Bureau, I'm Maggie Mullen.
KUNC is a member of the Mountain West News Bureau, a regional reporting collaboration. You can find more stories at KUNC.org.
Still ahead, one man's mission to revive the lost practice of horse dentistry. From KUNC, this is Colorado Edition. We now turn to the matter of prescription drug prices. The Associated Press released an analysis which shows that pharmaceutical companies are still increasing prices for brand-name prescription drugs. Lowering drug prices was a part of Governor Jared Polis's strategy to save Coloradans money on health care, a plan he released in April this year.
As a part of that strategy, Colorado lawmakers passed legislation that would allow the state to import prescription drugs from Canada, something that could mean more affordable prescriptions for Coloradans. The law needed federal approval to move forward, and after the Trump administration recently got on board, it seemed like the coast was clear, until Canada piped up. Joining us to talk about what's next is John Ingold, a reporter for the Colorado Sun. John, welcome to Colorado Edition.
Thank you for having me.
So after the U.S. Health and Human Services Secretary Alex Azar announced that his department would move forward with allowing states to kind of set up these programs, Canadian officials expressed concerns. Tell us what happened there.
So first of all, the folks in Canada said that they hadn't been consulted. So it kind of caught them a little bit by surprise. And this was a bit of a pivot from the Health and Human Services Secretary. He had previously called these plans, this kind of idea of importing drugs from Canada to reduce prices for American consumers, he'd called it a gimmick. So, sort of switching here, it caught Canada off guard, and they sort of immediately started expressing concerns about potential dangers to their supply chain, that Canadian shelves could be swept clean of drugs.
I'm curious, in Colorado's case, is this something the state could do without Canada's support?
So I think anytime you get into import and export stuff, you need government approval. You know, you can't, in the same way you need, U.S. federal government approval to bring drugs into the country, Canada could certainly step in and block export of drugs coming into the United States. So I'm not sure they necessarily explicitly need Canada's support, but Canada could definitely throw a wrench in things here.
Let's say things do work out with Canada. The state would still have to find a partner from the industry to work with. What's the latest on that?
The state is in like just the very earliest stages of trying to set this program up. They have until September of 2020 to actually get the plan together and submit it to the federal government for approval. And the federal government now has its own timeline for laying out the rules and getting those finalized for how state programs are supposed to work. But at that point, Colorado would need to pick a supplier, somebody who can actually get the drugs into the country and get them to Colorado and to Colorado consumers. And that appears to have a few roadblocks as well, because the pharmaceutical industry and pharmaceutical distributors haven't been too enthusiastic about these ideas.
Certainly a story we'll be following over the next couple weeks. John Ingold is a reporter for the Colorado Sun. John, thank you.
Of course, anytime.
For many of us, a trip to the dentist can be costly and sometimes a bit painful, but it's important to our overall health. The same is true for horses, who also need yearly dental care. KUNC's Esther Honig introduces us to one Colorado veterinarian who's reviving the forgotten practice of horse dentistry.
Okay, let me show you this.
It's late in the morning, and Dr. Scott Marks is working on a patient when he spots a loose tooth.
So we call that stage 2 mobile right now.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
The tooth will be fine for now, but as Sundance gets older, it may have to come out.
So he's done.
Sundance is a 15-year-old Mustang and one of four horses getting a routine checkup at Kristen Ermont's farm in rural Weld County. At around $200 per animal, Ermon says it costs about the same as taking her family of four to see the dentist.
Yeah, we set money aside and plan ahead for this, definitely.
But this isn't some trivial new trend in pet care. Marks says horses need good teeth in order to digest their food, which is also why horse dentistry was so advanced in the early 1900s.
Because it had to be, because that was our transportation. It was what we used to work in fields. And so a lot of the concepts we're using now were known back then. But once the cars and trucks and tractors came in, a lot of it just kind of went away.
When Marks went to veterinary school in the early 90s, there was little emphasis on horse dentistry. Once he started practicing, he saw firsthand just how bad the modern techniques were.
If you went to your dentist, you sat in a chair, he didn't ask you to open your mouth, didn't shine a bright light in your mouth, didn't use a mirror, took a finger and rubbed him on your front teeth and said, "You're fine, go home," what would you think of the quality of the examination? And that's typically what we do to horses.
Over the last 20 years, Marks has helped rebuild the field of equine dentistry and teaches these techniques around the U.S. and the world.
In South Africa, Australia, Caribbean, Canada. So who is this? Hickory, let me go look at his record and I'll be right back.
Hickory, a brown quarter horse, is led to the dentist's chair, or in this case, a padded stall, and given a sedative. As his eyes get droopy, Marks props open his mouth with a speculum and turns on his headlamp.
You know, when you look in there, see how far back the teeth go?
Wow, oh my gosh.
And you can see those.
Horses have between 36 and 44 teeth that look like gnarly, stained piano keys. They grow almost like our fingernails.
He all looks pretty good, and even with those sharp points, his cheeks really aren't cut.
When horses chew, they wear down their teeth, and sharp points grow in as protection. But over time, this leads to cuts and an uneven bite. And just like a human dentist uses a file to even out a tooth after putting in a new filling, Marks uses a series of modified power tools, some of which he helped to design.
All we take off is the overgrowth. We don't ever take off anything that's normal length or short.
His assistant, Stephanie Malman, is there to do a lot of what you'd expect from a dental technician, like pulling Hickory's tongue off to the side and offering a bit of encouragement.
There you go. That feels better. Oh, buddy. And I think just in general, talking to them and stuff like that, they just respond.
Yeah, that's great.
And all the while, Kristen Ehrman hovers nearby, just in case something unexpected comes up.
It's a mom job. You got to take care of them just like your kids. Make sure they're okay.
Marks says a typical vet might use a few hand files, but they can't be as precise. He also takes x-rays and performs root canals, just like a human dentist.
Who do you think has like a harder job?
Us.
Yeah.
No question.
As one of just a handful of specialists in the state, he and his partner are typically booked 2 months out.
Right.
By late afternoon, Marks packs up his mobile clinic. He wheels his toolbox into the trailer that doubles as his office and heads home for the day. Esther Honig, KUNC.
As our show draws to a close today, we want to give you a taste of one of the various peach festivals that happened in Colorado over the weekend. Our producer, Lily Tyson, went around the Fort Collins Peach Festival asking people about their favorite peach, well, anything. Here's some of what we heard.
Oh, I don't know. It's really hard. I love fresh peaches, but also peach pie is another one of my favorites, and we might pick up some peaches to take home and make one later, so.
Peach margaritas?
Normal peaches.
Peach ice cream.
I love peach cobbler, a la mode, a little vanilla ice cream on top of that. Yum, yum.
You took the words out of my mouth. You took the cobbler out of my mouth.
I love peach rings, and anything sweet that has peaches in it is really good.
Peach smoothie?
My favorite thing to eat is just a peach, just a perfectly ripe peach with a paper towel to catch the drips.
That's our show for today. Colorado Edition is hosted by me, Henry Zimmerman.
And me, Erin O'Toole. Our show is produced by Lily Tyson.
Special thanks to Brian Larson, Catherine Welch, and Ray Ellen Bichelle, who all contributed to today's show.
And thank you for listening. We'll be back tomorrow with another episode of Colorado Edition.